This is continuing with Jack Locke on 17th August 76. So you were saying that it took quite a while to reduce all this data.
Yes, but that the staff of the at Penticton has never really been large enough for the amount of hardware that we have there.
Yeah.
And that has, I think, made the the rate of contribution slower than it should be. Should have been.
You were the first director at Penticton also?
Yes.
Were you personally involved in some of the scientific projects?
Oh, yes.
Which ones?
Well, the ones that I just mentioned.
I see.
Primarily. I was not supposed to be the officer in charge of the observatory, but when the time came to appoint someone to be officer in charge, the deputy minister...
do you mind if we go for another 5 minutes or so?
No, I think so.
Yeah, thanks.
And the deputy minister of the department said we can't send a new employee out in the field and expect him to handle it.
Take it over at this
point. So that I was supposed to go out there for the first 2 years as officer in charge and then come back to Ottawa, the observatory would still be under me administratively, but I wouldn't be have anything to do with the scientific program. Well, the 2 years stretched into three, and I reluctantly came back to Ottawa because I really enjoyed life at the observatory, and it was far enough from headquarters, and long-distance telephone calls weren't as common in those days and they are now. It was a very nice atmosphere.
And did John Galt take over then?
Yes, he was always, it was always the intention that he would take over.
And that was when you came
out? That was in 1962. I had been there a year before the official opening of the observatory, 1959-62.
What would you say have been the main contributions, especially those before 65 or so, but you saw it to go afterwards, of the DRAO?
Well, I think the low-frequency work is probably the unique part of the work that's been done out there. Yeah, it's been rather slow to get to the publishing stage, but it's been, I think, a valuable contribution, which is Carm Costain and Rob Roger. There have been other postdoctoral fellows and
right.
so on contributing to it, but they're the main ones. And I think the other main piece of work has been the long baseline interferometer.
Right.
This was a very strong point at the time. There was some talk in Canada that really we didn't need two radio observatories back in 1967, 68, and perhaps Penticton should be closed down.
Referring to Algonquin coming in, yes.
And we would never have been able to develop the long baseline interferometry ourselves in Canada
if right.
we hadn't had two observatories, essentially one on one coast and one on the other.
Right.
So that the Penticton Observatory contributed lots of that. John Galt was very deep involved.
Yes, he's told me about that. So you would say then that the 25-meter dish at Penticton, its main contribution was nothing like what you intended when you...
No, I don't think so. It was a large telescope when we started to build it, and that was an era when... bigger telescope, bigger radio telescope was being commissioned every 6 months.
Right, right.
And so it very quickly became obsolete for the sort of work that it was designed to do. It's still a useful instrument for survey work. There isn't much demand.
Or monitoring.
Monitoring pulsars and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier that you came back to Ottawa, and then you got involved with the Algonquin. Could you tell me just about the beginnings of the idea of Algonquin, why in the East Coast and so forth? So.
Well, it stemmed, of course, from Arthur Covington's work. His observatory was at Goth Hill, which was just immediately south of Ottawa, and right on an extension of the runway at Ottawa Airport, Ottawa International Airport. And so the interference levels were getting very high there.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually started looking for for another site further away. At about the same time that that the proposal for a large dish for the National Research Council.
And what year would this be?
This would be 1957. It's 1957.
Well, 57. That's
yes. That this is. You see, they had their proposal in for a large telescope, although, and hadn't given up the idea of getting one. So that in looking for a new site for Covington's solar work, they were also looking for a site suitable for a large dish.
Now, was the proposal in 57 more specific than the first one that you had talked about?
Well, not in 57, but by 1960 it was very specific.
And what was wanted then?
Well, they were wanting a 150-foot telescope site suitable for it. As it turned out, the design was essentially the same design as the Parkes telescope, although the tolerances are considerably higher.
I'm a little still don't quite see why on the East Coast it seemed like it'd be advantageous to get out in the desert.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, the reason for putting it on the East Coast was that that's the center of population, and it was to be a national facility used by the university. So the thought at that time was to find a site which was both quiet, free, but near the universities at the same time.
So that's similar to NRAO, why NRAO is on the East Coast.
Right, that's right.
But then DRAO and DAO are not designed in that respect?
No, they were not designed to be facilities. They have turned out to be that they are used, the instruments are used by universities as well. But they weren't established as facilities, whereas the Algonquin Radio Observatory was established as a facility, and that was a strong argument that was used to get the funds to build it.
And when was Algonquin actually picked? Now, you say that around the late 50s began looking for a new site.
Yes, actually the same equipment which I used for the site search in British Columbia was used later on in the year by Norm Broughton and some others at the council to find the site for our own.
I see. And did Covington move up there before the big dish was up there?
Oh, yes. He started. For many years he operated both at Goth Hill and at Algonquin.
He must have told me this.
He's very fussy about calibration. He didn't want to close down the observatory until he had long over that period.
Right. So it was picked, but it was still several years before. I guess it was mainly just a matter of trying to get the money for the.
For several years at least, it was just a solar observing station. And then as Art Covington probably told you, he launched into a solar array, 32 dish array. And it was built at the same time as the 150 foot telescope.
And when was this now?
This was in the middle 1960s. From 1960, I guess, 1965.
And the telescope came into operation when?
In 1967.
And I'm just trying to compare this.
1966, I guess.
Just trying to compare this with the 140 foot, which was 66 or 7 also, I think.
Yes,
so
yes, they were building.
It must have been a little bit of a race going on here in some respects.
Yes, it was.
Although the 140 foot should have won by several years. Were there any such troubles with the Algonquin dish?
No, there weren't.
Just because
partly, I guess, because many of the problems have been solved in part.
Right. Did you have the same optical conversion system?
Yes.
I didn't realize that.
Yes.
And you still? Do you still?
We still. Yes. It's still an integral part of the system, although it's computerized now. But it's still the coordinate conversion.
And what was the original design shortest wavelength?
It was designed for 3 centimeters, for 10 gigahertz. It's been used down to 1 centimeter,
right.
Down to 8 millimeters, but the efficiency is not
But there's been no improvement of the surface since it was
No.
I see. No. That was just pushing it a bit further. Well, have I missed something in terms of your scientific work up until...
No, I don't think
so. ...the mid-60s? Sounds like you were mainly working so that others can make their scientific contributions.
Well, I guess that's partly so, or at least I've flitted around a bit. Radio astronomy has been my main interest, I guess, since I became involved in it. And it was partly for that reason that I left the Dominion Observatory and went to the Council. After I left Penticton and returned to Ottawa, I found I missed the getting my hands in and making observations. And so rather than try to go back out there where John Gall was in charge, I decided I'd join a group at the Council and get in on some of their early observing there. And helped to launch the variable source program there, which is one of the things.
Right, that's one of the main things Algonquin is known for, of course. Was that, from the beginning, sort of one of the main programs it was designed for?
When it was designed, sources weren't known to vary.
By the time
it was finished, it was...
65 or 6, they were just discovered, right?
So it seemed like a useful thing to do. The program lasted a lot longer than you intended it to.
So it was just designed as a general purpose instrument, for universities all over the country. Yeah.
It was the only type of instrument which was considered parabolic dish, because it's the type of instrument in which you can do short programs and as a facility for use by university astronomers.
Right.
Where it's an array and interferometer and that sort of thing.
And very specialized.
Well, I guess that's
it. Yeah, okay, thank you very much. Yeah.